CTBK is more than just a full-service accounting firm. They are one team with an innovative approach to accounting and rise to each new challenge with collaborative problem-solving skills. CTBK goes above and beyond by lending helping hands in the Buffalo and Niagara community through volunteer work and donations, and is partnered up with Victory Sports for 2020 and 2021 to keep kids in the community active. The professionals at CTBK are determined to help individuals and businesses succeed. Whether a large corporation, a small business, or somewhere in between, call CTBK at 716-630-2400. Again, 716-630-2400, and see what CTBK's one-team approach can do for you.
Welcome to a March Madness edition of Tim Graham and Friends, brought to you by CTBK, CPAs and Business Consultants. I'm Tim Graham of The Athletic, here with my co-host Jonah Bronstein of Bronstein Sports Plus. And we're joined by a veteran of March Madness, Nick McDonald, senior guard from Damon, fresh off of his tournament experience. Damon won its first round game against Jefferson, falls in the second round to St. Michael's. So he's now a free man and able to join Tim Graham and Friends. Nick, it's been a long time coming, and we've been looking forward to this. Thanks for doing this.
Yes, has been a long time coming. Appreciate you guys having me. It's first time ever being on a podcast, so I guess no other podcast I'd rather be a rookie on than the Tim Graham and Friends show.
Well, we'll be gentle. All right. I'll speak for myself. I don't want to speak for Jonah. I know that you've been grilled by him once or twice over the years, whether it be at Damon or your previous stop at Niagara. But for those who don't know, Nick McDonald is the son of Mike McDonald, who, I mean, I don't want to give away a story here, Jonah. Can I mention what we were talking about last night, or is that something that you've been like researching?
Yeah, and I'll correct you if you get
I had an idea, and I think I'm not too far off, that your dad is the all-time winningest college coach in Western New York history. And or getting there very close, right, Jonah, based on what we've been able to look at from his time at Canisius and, of course, at Damon, over 400 wins.
I got away from Taps Gallagher. It's somewhere, I think, 461, I think Coach McDonald is at, and Taps Gallagher, longtime Niagara coach that they have since named the Gallagher Center after him, won 464. During his time, almost a century ago.
Some club teams back then, probably. I mean, if you took a look at some of the teams that Taps Gallagher beat, we're probably, you know, looking at, you know, I don't know what.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But they were a
Gilbert with four players.
Niagara got to be a nationally relevant program, making NIT runs with some really good teams in the 50s and 60s. But some of those early season wins, you see Al Maroon Ford and Lockport YMCA and Nabisco Tech on the schedule. And, you know, I don't know how good those opponents were in all of the games that Niagara played in the 20s and 30s.
None of those for Mike McDonald.
The real question is, could those 30s, 40s, 50s teams beat your Gloria J. Parks teams, Jonah?
Well, Nick, as you know, it depends who shows up. It depends who shows up at the beginning of the game and who shows up at halftime. But as a wise – actually, I was going to say it was a wise man, Mark McDonald, but it was actually wise, Jaden Harrison told me. He said, with my teams at Gloria Parks, it all comes down to me, the captain. If I'm making my shots, we win, and if I don't, we lose.
You're the player GM, greatest player GM in probably that community center's history, might I add.
For those who may not guess, Nick and Jonah go back a ways, probably even to high school – era, right? Working camps together for the old man, all this stuff. So they have a bit of a history. This is my first introduction to Nick. So I guess that's redundant. You can't have a first introduction. This is my introduction to Nick, but he's been hyped up as quite the entertainer. So a little pressure on Nick to bring the goods here as we talk about March Madness and Damon men and women. And the women are in the Elite Eight. They're going to play Monday in St. Joseph's, Missouri, against Texas Woman's College in the D2 tournament. Nick, let's just start there. What's it been like in your time at Damon, obviously, even when you were at Niagara, you're so close to the program with your father being the coach. But to have this run, this culture, you hear about it so often when you talk about the Bills and the Sabres. But at Damon, there must be a pretty impressive culture going with both the men and the women having sustained success over the years.
There is 100%. And in my post-game press conference the other day after we had lost, I was really happy to hear my dad gave a lot of flowers to the former head coach that he succeeded, Don Silveri. He really helped build this program. And I think my dad's very grateful that he inherited a program with a rich history, a program that had produced a lot of good players and had gone on to win at a high level and stuff like that. It just so happened my dad was able to kind of inherit this program and continue to build that family atmosphere, that family environment, continue to kind of transition it into the new era of Division II hoops. When Coach Silveri was here, it was NAIA, which was obviously not NCAA affiliated. But when my dad took over, it was all about they were in Division II. So he kind of really transformed that and put his own imprint on that while keeping the same kind of core background that was built up on it. And, you know, I feel like I've always been a part of my dad's programs for my entire life. You know, I was born in 2000, which I know is going to make some people who listen to this podcast feel real old and stuff, but I was born in 2000 and I was a little bit too young for my dad's Canisius College days when he was coaching. I remember like little bits and pieces of being around the program and stuff like that. But when he got the Medai job, I remember everything. And that Medai was really like my childhood, my upbringing, being around that program, being around the players. The players were such great big brothers to me. I would stand behind the bench during the games. I would, you know, get them water during the games. I'd be in the locker room before, during, after the games. I really felt like I was a part of the team. And then obviously he gets the Damon job and I'm a little bit older. And now I'm in the position where the players and the coaches, they're almost like mentors to me. I'm getting in the gym with them during the summertime. I'm playing pickup with them during their off season and stuff like that. And to have it kind of all come full circle and be a player on my dad's teams for the past 3 years. And, you know, I mentioned it in my press conference as well. There was a lot of, through the years, and especially this past weekend, making the NCAA tournament, there was a lot of support from family, from friends, from those same players that I referenced who were big brothers to me and really looked after me like I was one of their own. And it just was a cool full circle moment because my dream and goal was to always play in the NCAA tournament. And I was able to make that a reality this weekend in my last year of college basketball playing for my father. And not just that, we won a game in the NCAA tournament. Not many people can say they've made it to the NCAA tournament, and fewer people can say they've advanced in the NCAA tournament and won a game. And we woke up the morning we played St. Michael's and we were in the round of 32. We were in the second round. We were one of 32 teams left in Division II college men's basketball. And that really meant a lot to me. And, you know, we didn't play a great game that night, that we lost to a great team, but definitely walked out of that gym that night with my head held high because I had a great run, a great career. And I got to finish it off with the tournament and being a part of a team that went 25-9 and set the NCAA school record for wins in a season. So there was a lot to be proud of, and it just kind of all like connected. It was like this old little full circle moment for me of just seeing it all come together.
I wanted to ask you about the just real quick. I just wanted to ask about that news conference, Jonah, because it's along that same vein, and you're kind of getting at it there. You had a very poignant thing that you said about your decision to transfer from Niagara, about how you were watching your dad's success, and I don't want to get it quite wrong, so I'll just kind of leave it there. But you said you felt you needed to be a part of this. Can you retell that story? Because I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. So 2020-21 COVID season was my sophomore year of college. We had just lost in the MAC semifinals to Iona. It was my second year at Niagara at the time, and it was a tough loss, very emotional loss. And got back home after that. And I can confidently say now, like, if you were to tell me after that game, that would have been your last game at Niagara, I probably would have told you at the time you're lying, because I didn't have any thoughts about transferring or leaving. I had thoughts about the season, thoughts about, my career, where everything was going, just kind of, I would say some frustrations that were just built up upon how the season went. We didn't have a great record. We were a little bit below 500. I felt like I didn't play my best. But anyway, my dad's team was in the NCAA tournament at the time, and they were in Albany. They were doing like a little COVID bubble for the East region, and they won their first round game against Bloomfield, and they played St. Thomas Aquinas College in the Sweet 16 game, which winner would go to the Elite Eight in Evansville, Indiana, the National Elite Eight. And I'm sitting there with my mom and my little brother, and we had the game up on the TV, and I was just watching it, and I'm watching it. Obviously, it was a hell of a game. It was super entertaining. They went on to win, and afterward, the stream kept on. They showed all the players cutting down nets, holding the trophy, taking the picture with the trophy, a team picture. And it just was like this great moment because they had really been through a lot that year through the COVID season, and they were able to have it all culminate with winning the championship and getting to experience being one of, eight teams to make it to the Elite Eight. And I'm sitting there, and just in the back of my mind, I was like, kind of like just like thinking, I was like, that's it. Like that's what I need to be a part of. That's what I got to experience when I was younger. And I was standing right underneath that ladder, watching my dad, his assistant coaches, his players at Medai climb up that ladder and cut down nets. I always felt like I was a part of those programs. And I'm sitting there, and I had just received noticed early in that year that that year wouldn't count towards my eligibility. So I had played 2 years, but I still had 3 years remaining. And when I watched that moment, watching them play, I just kind of, like you said, I was just sitting there. I was like, I feel like that should be me. I feel like I should be there with him. I feel like I should be part of that moment. And it kind of was like the first thing that kind of got the ball in motion in terms of making the decision to transfer. And I wasn't really sure about it right away when I watched that moment and everything, but it kind of got me thinking and, thinking, talking to a lot of different people, talking to my coaches at Niagara, talking to my family and friends, and just decided to go for it and decided to make the move. And couldn't be happier that I made the move. Wouldn't change a thing about how my career went, how my 5-year journey was with two at Niagara and three at Damon. I'm very blessed for everybody who was involved with it.
I just wanted to correct the record real quick, and Noodles jogged, rang a bell in my head. Don Silvery is actually Western New York's all-time winningest coach, 635 wins from his time. Started ECC a long time at Damon and
Well, that's
finished up
not
at
even
Villa
close.
Maria College. Yeah, I didn't think about that because I checked all the Division Ones and the NCAAs. None of these are NCAA institutions at the time he was there. But, if we're counting all the college basketball in Western New York, Don Silvery won a lot of games at Damon, had a lot of very good teams over the years. Alex Nwora, the ECC coach, came and played for him during that time. And they were, he built that into a very successful NAIA program and got it kind of on the doorstep of this transition to Division II that happened when Mike McDonald took over 10 years ago.
So then we're going to have to say NCAA all time, right?
Yeah. And Mike McDonald holds a distinction that I don't know if it's ever been really narrowed down how many other people have done this, but very, very few, if any, that have won more than 100 games at the Division I, Division II, and Division III levels, and all doing it, pretty much along the same main street of Buffalo. These
Right.
schools, Medai, Canisius, and Damon, you can take one bus to get from all three of them if you
He
wanted to.
always jokes, and it's true. He's been able to coach Division One, Division Two, and Division Three basketball while living in the same house. And I don't think there's many people that can say that across the country. Being able to see the coaching business firsthand, growing up through him and meeting a lot of different coaches throughout the years, that's something that is super, super rare. And I'm very happy that it played out that way, because that means, I never had to move. I never had to switch schools. I've been in this place my whole life, been in this city my whole life. So I'm very happy that his career has played out the way it has.
What you said there, Nick, reminds me of the Pat LaFontaine line that he always likes to deliver is that he played his entire NHL career and never had to change his license plates because he played for the Islanders, Rangers, and Sabres. But not having to move, I think, probably is a little tougher to do. Your thoughts on the women as they enter their Elite Eight game on Monday? What's it been like to be around with them in terms of the culture? And how about this? It kind of got away from me. How would you describe the Damon culture?
Damon culture, I would describe it as a family, tight-knit culture, not just with the basketball program or the athletic department, just with the school. Small-knit school and, you know, a small little suburb, Amherst, New York, outside of Buffalo. But I think everybody that comes here has a positive experience because it's good people. People that care, people that want to see you succeed in all aspects, whether it's academics, athletics, and just a good overall environment to go to school in, good people, good vibes. And I think that's why a lot of people come here and you see them have success, whether it's a player, a coach, a teacher, something along those lines, just a good overall environment. And to kind of transition that, our women's program embodies that just as much as any team or organization on our campus. Coach Banker does a phenomenal job with our girls team. We actually play double headers. We play in the conference game. So our women's team plays at 6 and we play at 8, no matter if we're home or away. We're always kind of playing the same opponent back to back. So I've always liked that because it gives me a chance to be around and see them play a lot. And I have a lot of respect for what she's done with the program. It's unbelievable. Pretty much all she does is win. No matter non-conference, playoff time in March, she's incredible, but she puts a lot of work into it. She's really prepared. She's really detail-oriented. I love talking basketball with her. And I couldn't be happier for her, the girls on the team, just everybody around that program that they've been able to advance. Obviously, it was real disappointing for our season end. We really wanted a chance to get to the Elite Eight, but could not be happier for our women's basketball team. Going to be rooting for them all the way. Hopefully they can, you know, advance in the Elite Eight. This is the second time they've been there in 4 years. I'm hoping this year they're more prepared for the moment than they were last time. And, you know, I'm sure, I don't know much about the team they're playing, but I'm sure they're a very tough team. And I really hope they can advance and get 2 or 3 wins, you know, get to a chance to play in the national championship game. I think that'd be great for our school. My dad always kind of compared it to, you know, if you look at UConn, right? UConn men's and women's both have strong basketball programs. And, you know, I think Damon can relate to that a little bit. You know, there's no, some people may think there's some bitterness or some, you know, oh, we want to be better than, better than this, better than that. Like, absolutely not. You know, there's nothing but love between both of our programs here. We both want to see each other succeed. And I really hope they do that coming up this week.
One of the cool things about Coach Banker that, Noodles would know, but maybe not everybody knows that she came to Damon from Grand Island High School and had a lot of success winning the sectionals almost every year and going to states and had prior Division II coaching experience before that. But you don't always see someone make that jump from high school to Division II NCAA and then have the kind of success that happened very quickly there. So it is kind of neat to see a local individual and go from that level and kind of show that can happen. Cause I think you see when jobs open and there might be local coaches at lower levels that we think could be good at say Canisius, for example, but they don't get the job because it's too risky to hire a junior college coach or a high school coach or a small college coach. And Coach Banker has kind of shown that it can work with the right person.
You've mentioned it a couple of times, and I know that this is his nickname, but I don't know the story behind it. Nick, where did you get the nickname Noodles?
I knew this was going to come up, and I'm very glad you asked me because a lot of people ask me this, and I've never felt the need to just full on tell them the full story. But
is this a scoop?
What better platform to tell it on than this show and my first ever podcast? So basically, when I was a kid, my grandmother, she still does it to this day, whenever she calls and leaves a voicemail, she always would end it with Toodles. She'd be like, hey, how you doing? You know, give me a call later. I'm doing this, that, blah, 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 blah. And she'd be like, all right, take care. Toodles. So little 5-6-year-old me or whatever used to think that was the funniest thing of all time. For some random reason, we had our house phone. I have 2 older brothers and a little brother. So obviously my little brother's a little tiny baby. My older brothers are 5, 6 years older than me. So I'm like 5 or 6. They're like, they're 10, 11, 12 around there. We would come home from something and get the notification that there was a message on there. We click it and grandma would be on there, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I'll talk to you guys soon. Toodles. And like, I would just start dying laughing. So anyway, we have a family party 1 year. I don't remember if it was a holiday thing. I don't remember if it was a summer thing. I don't remember the exact detail, but we were all together and we were in Connecticut at my grandma and grandparents, grandpa and grandma's house, which is where my dad and all his brothers and all his siblings grew up. Still the same house they live in to this day. And somebody, I don't know if it was my dad or one of my intoxicated uncles, kind of passed that message along to grandma and all the other people, like, hey, nobody finds your little Toodles thing funnier than Nick. So she starts like the whole party that whole night. She's like tickling me and she's like, oh, Oodles von Toodles, Oodles on Toodles. She's like tickling Toodles, Toodles the whole night. And I'm just laughing, laughing my ass off. So finally, somebody, I don't know who it was like, I think it was my uncle Chris. He was like, eh, we gotta start calling him, gotta start calling him Toodles. And then my dad was like, yeah, it could be his nickname. And I think it was Uncle
And
Chris who
you're
chimed in.
21, right? You're about 21 years old at this time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm like minus 15. But they're like, you gotta start calling him Toodles. And then my Uncle Chris was like, nah, that's too girly. We should call him Noodles. And from there on out, my dad loved it. I guess there was an old basketball player who my dad later would inform me about. I believe his name was Craig Noodles Neal. Craig Neal was his name. I don't know. You can maybe look that one up, Jonah, while I finish the story. But Noodles Neal. So my dad,
Yeah,
like,
Jonah, get to work.
He's right about
I'm
the name.
bossing out. I'm already, first time on, I'm already bossing out orders. How about that? But I'm like, so my dad loved it. And he was like, yeah, Noodles, Noodles. So the rest of the weekend, night, whatever, they were all calling me Noodles. We went back to Buffalo, and it was when my dad had just started Medi at the time. And I remember the very first kind of team meeting when he met with everybody, and we brought him to our house, and we had like this kind of little family thing. And he introduced him, like, this is my son Matt, this is my son Pat. And everybody had been calling me Noodles in my like immediate family for the previous however weeks or months or whatever. And he goes, this is my son Noodles. And all the players kind of start laughing, like, what, what? And they're like, I'm like, yeah, it's my nickname. That's my nick. What's your real name? My name's Nick. My nickname's Noodles. And just like ever since then, it just stuck. And there was people that brought it to life. I give rest in peace, Coach Gabe Michael, my dad's old assistant from Medi. He really brought that nickname to life. He would always yell out Noodles at the top of his lungs. And growing up, like camps, youth basketball, stuff like that, it kind of gave me a little bit of an identity. Like everybody knew me by the name Noodles. I remember being like 13 or 14 before I was getting ready to go to high school. And a fellow, I don't remember who it was, but a fellow basketball player who I played with like my whole life was like, hey, I didn't even know your real name. Like, I didn't know your name was Nick. He's like, I just knew you by Noodles your whole life. And I was like, yeah, well, a lot of people did. And a lot of people still call me by that to this day. It's stuck. And I like to say the real people know me by the name Noodles. So if you're somebody that knows the nickname and calls me that on the one name basis, you've been very important to me, and I'm very grateful.
We're going to have to see if we can hook you up with Craig Neal. We'll find out, see you track him
That would be
down
fun.
and get the get some noodles on noodles action.
I'll
Well, I
always
looked it
remember
up.
that too, because I was like, my older brothers didn't have a nickname either. So I kind of was like, when it's all going down and the players are like screaming, because Matt and Pat are two similar names. There would be times like one of the players would be like, hey, what's his name again? What's his name again? But they'd see me and they'd be like, oh, that's Noodles. What's up, Noodles? Like, I'm thinking to myself, like, neither of my brothers have a nickname. Like, none of the kids I go to school would have a nickname. Is this kind of cool? Like, I don't know if I want people to tell me. And then I just full on embraced it and just like had fun with it. I remember my dad telling me that too. He was like, there was a legendary player back in the day whose nickname was Noodles. Like, there's no reason why you can't have the nickname. It just stuck, and it's been very fun.
Craig Neal, who played it, was a star player at Georgia Tech in the 80s under Bobby Kremins. Had a little bit of time in the NBA, a cup of soup in the NBA, maybe we'll say. But now he's the associate head coach at Nevada, which is having a really good year in an NCAA tournament, I think, as a 7 seed. And had some time. He was the New Mexico head coach before this for
That's who it
a period
was.
of time.
Yes. I remember that when he was at New Mexico. When was he at New Mexico? Does it say there or no?
It was hired in 2013. I think it's New Mexico State,
Looks
but let
like
me
he's
double check
been, well,
that.
that was where Steve Alford was, right? Which he's
Yep.
at Nevada now, so he's been a Steve Alford assistant. Let's talk about the tournament. What let's I don't know. I don't know that we want to go pick for pick here, Nick, but you got a bracket there in front of you? Do you got some what do you what do
I
we
got
like
my
here?
bracket up right behind me here on my laptop. We can do this however you want, but what I'll do is I'll just give you quickly kind of spill the beans here. This is my final four that I've got. I've got UConn coming out of the East region. I have North Carolina coming out of the West region. So two number one seeds on the left side, and then on the right hand side, I got two number three seeds. I got Kentucky coming out of the South region and Creighton coming out of the Midwest region. And in my championship game, I have Creighton pulling off a little bit of a shocker, and I have Creighton beating UConn.
You are not alone in the Creighton love. I've heard it quite a bit. Seth Davis loves Creighton. What is it about Creighton that has you juiced up?
Well, if you haven't already known, if Jonah hasn't told you, I'm a big hoops junkie, so I watch a lot of.
Well, that's why you're on here. I
That's
mean,
why I guess that's
this
why
isn't
I'm on.
a charity case.
Yeah, so I
You've got to
watch
do a little work here.
not just D1, Division II, Division III, high school, NBA. If there's a basketball, I'm watching. I've started to follow women's a little bit more. This is actually going to be the second year I'm filling out a women's tournament challenge bracket. Last year I did for the first time and kind of followed it. Had a little friendly competition with my little brother. Regarding the women's tournament challenge, but no, to get it's Creighton. I've watched them play a couple times this year. I'm a big fan of watching Big East basketball for sure. I think I might add, I do think the Big East was very underrepresented this year in the March Madness field. I'm not going to go on a whole rant about that. I think every sports media person had their bone to pick with the NCAA selection committee, but Creighton, they're very talented. I think they have two, really, really good wings in Baylor Shireman and Trey Alexander. Ryan Kalkbrenner, the big man, is definitely one of the best big men in college basketball. He's not better than Zach Edey, I would say, but he's probably up in that top tier of big men who can score around the paint and protect the rim defensively. Steven Ashworth, their point guard, is a big time shooter. They're a fun team to watch and kind of a little nugget here that I think is getting underrated a little bit. I think they dropped down to a three seed because they lost early in the Big East tournament. Obviously, every season's different. Sometimes I think those teams that lose early in their conference tournaments, I think it can be a good thing for them when it comes time for March Madness. I think they are a little bit more rested. I think they come in to the tournament with a little bit of fire underneath them, like, hey, we got something to prove now. Like, this is where it really counts. Obviously there's certain years I can think back to UConn back in the day where they rattle off five wins in a row in the Big East tournament, and then boom, they just keep that train rolling and get hot and go win a national championship, right? But I think sometimes some of these teams, they expend so much energy in the conference tournament, they get to March Madness and they're a little bit beat up. So I think Creighton, they lost early to Providence in the Big East, I believe in the quarterfinals, and I think they're going to come in, and I think they're going to just come in guns a blazing and really just leave it all out there. I like watching them play. They share the ball. They got a great coach. Their coach's son played for him back in the day, so maybe that's a little bias. Greg McDermott had his son, Doug McDermott, who was an All-American. So just a fun team to watch, and I'm picking them to go far because I do think they're good enough to win the national championship. I tend to always kind of stay away from picking the chalk picks. So I guess that fits the bill, but I'm also going to be somewhat rooting for them a little bit to go far.
Al McGuire called that the stub your toe theory. He said if you get that loss in the conference tournament, it kind of resets the team's mindset and going into the tournament on a long winning streak after already cutting down the nets and celebrating one championship wasn't always good for the preparation of then going to winning another tournament.
And I can attest to that too, because we just went through that. We were riding about a 9-game win streak here to end our season, and we kind of had a slip up in the conference tournament finals. We did not play great against St. Thomas Aquinas. All respect to them, they deserve to win. And I think it was one of the reasons we came out so focused in that first round game against Jefferson University is we were like, hey, we're here now. Like, let's go do it. And, I wonder if the mindset would have been a little bit different if we were, a little bit too full from the success and winning at a high level already. So I think that is a real thing. Obviously, every team and every year is different, but there's definitely something to be said about that.
Any other picks that or teams going deep that you think would be a surprise to the casual basketball fan?
I got a couple. I'm looking at it now. I got a couple double digit seeds advancing to the Sweet 16 that I think would be interesting to keep an eye on. The first one is James Madison up top in the top right, the South region. James Madison is, I believe, 30-3 or something outrageous. It's like all they do is win, it seems like this year. I know they had an opening night win at Michigan State, who's very talented and probably could be anybody in this field, but was very inconsistent. And that's why they're right around the 8-9 seed category. But James Madison, I watched them a lot last season because Jonah would know they had a former Western New Yorker, Tekal Molson, who played college basketball at Canisius College and then went on to Seton Hall and finished his career at James Madison. He's a good friend of mine. I've played against him for a while. And, summertime pickup and stuff like that, open gym. So I watched them a lot last year. Obviously, totally different team this year, but they do have some holdovers. And I just think when there's a team that's really riding like that 31-3 record, or they're really confident, they kind of got that aura to them. Like, no matter who we play, whether it's a high major, a low major, a 5 seed, a 1 seed, like they kind of just got a little bit of special glow to them. And I think they can kind of ride that momentum and get hot. And I think they play Wisconsin in the first round, who just had a little run there in the conference tournament, made it to the finals. Wisconsin's been a very streaky team this year, so I think that's a good matchup for them. And then the second round, they'll play either Duke or Vermont, which could be a challenging game. Duke's been up and down as well. I'm just gonna ride with them. I think they win. And there's something to be said. It's sometimes we overthink all the metrics and the analytics, stuff like that. If a team wins, they win. And there's something to be said about experienced winners. And for a team like that, that they won a lot last year with Tikal, and they're winning a lot this year with a whole new group. And they've gotten a lot of notoriety for how they've been. And I think they're going to continue to roll with that. The other one that I think is very intriguing is down in the Midwest region, also 12 seed would be McNeese State. McNeese State is coached by former polarizing figure, I guess would be the right word to say, Will Wade, who used to be at LSU and was fired for a multitude of NCAA investigations and violations and stuff like that. McNeese State kind of had the balls to hire him, knowing it would be dangerous. But he got his little suspension and he brought in a lot of talent. And they've kind of been similar to JMU, where it's just like all they've done is win. And I looked on that team top to bottom. I watched their conference championship game. I forget who they're playing. I'm kind of blanking on it. But they had some talent. They had guys who are playing at McNeese State, and they have no business playing at McNeese State, if that makes sense. Will Wade used to be in the SEC, and a lot of his team looks the part of SEC players. They're tall, they're strong, they're long, they're super athletic. And I think the main thing he does is he gets them to play hard. And they play Gonzaga in the first round. Another, interesting one, because Gonzaga might want to slow it down a little bit and run their offense, which they usually do. But
Gonzaga is not Gonzaga. When you hear Gonzaga, it gives you a certain feeling about Mark Few's program, and they are not it. Not this year, anyway.
100%. They're not as talented as they have been in the years past. Whereas McNeese State is loaded with talent. That's the one thing they don't lack. So I think that could be an opportunity for them. And actually, I don't think everybody thinks they may see Kansas in the second round. I don't think Kansas is going to beat Samford. I think I have Samford. I have a little 12-13 second round matchup there between McNeese State and Samford. Samford plays a very for. The casual viewer who likes to watch the game go this way, back and forth, almost like a track meet. That should be a game that they have circled on their calendar. I don't know what date or time it is, but Samford plays this nonstop pressing, trapping, double teaming, shooting a lot of threes, playing really quick type of style. And Kansas is reeling right now in terms of injuries. They're out without Kevin McCullough for the entirety of this tournament, whether it's one game, four games, five games. And the one thing they don't have is a lot of depth. They have a very good guard. They have DeJuan Harris, who's probably an All-American level player, but besides that, they don't really have many true guards or true depths to go against that press for 40 minutes. And I think Samford is going to be one that they could be able to get, kind of like we were talking about McNeese State and Gonzaga, they could get them out of their rhythm and out of their style. I think Samford could get Kansas a little bit out of their element.
The 15 and 2 seed games are always special in the NCAA tournament. I don't necessarily want to go through all four of them, but one of them involves the Metro Atlantic champion, St. Peter's against Tennessee. So with your knowledge of the MAC, your thoughts on St. Peter's and
Well,
any shot that it may have against the Volunteers.
I always joke with my little brother Mark. I always joke that every year there's always like one like head scratching, what the hell like type upset that nobody ever picks. So I'll be straight up honest with you. I don't see any of the two seeds beating the 15, but I didn't see Purdue losing to FDU last year. And 2 years ago, I didn't see Kentucky losing to St. Peter. It's like it seems like every year there's always one where nobody sees it. You watch all these bracket shows. I'm sure I'm not the only one picking McNeese State and Samford to advance. There's always like one that just comes out of complete nowhere. So I would definitely say out of the four, though, I would agree with you. I think the St. Peter's Tennessee one could be one. Everybody talks about how Rick Barnes usually struggles in March. They got a hell of a team this year, and they have Dalton Knecht, who might be the singular best player in America. He's just been that dynamic of a scorer for the past 2 or 3 months now. And St. Peter's has got a little bit of a special glow to them, too. They kind of embrace that little underdog mentality role. I think that's why they went so far 2 years ago. Obviously, a new coach, whole new cast of players, not many players on this team that I had played against from my time in the MAC. The team 2 years ago, I played against pretty much that entire team. They had been together for 2 or 3 years, and they had a good group of continuity, group good good togetherness, good chemistry, and obviously really good basketball players. And that was able to great coaches too. Shaheen Holloway was able to lead them to the Elite Eight. But I haven't watched them enough this year to know like specifics about them, but I do know that there's a lot of people who are doubting Tennessee because they're saying, well, Rick Barnes doesn't usually get it done around this time of year. And who do they have besides Dalton Knecht? Somebody would be able to shut down that one player. And, what do we got? But I do think Tennessee will be able to get past that one. And I do think they'll be able to get to at least the Sweet 16 before I eventually have Creighton knock them off. But I've watched Tennessee enough this year. I think they're pretty good. Jonah, what do you think? Do you see any of those being like a head scratching shocker?
Any of your picks?
No, any of the 215s, like
Oh,
Tennessee.
well, I have a 15 seed I'm picking. It's a bit of a sentimental pick, but I like the story here. Long Beach State, their point guard and leading scorer, Marcus Sohannes, is actually the godson of my cousin who lives out in Portland. I remember going out to the wedding 19 years ago, and he was the ring bearer. And I went back a few years later, and we went to a Portland Trailblazers game, and he came along. He was maybe 7 or 8 years old then. And I've followed his career. He started at Washington State under Mike Hopkins, then spent a year at VCU, and is now having a really good finish of his career at Long Beach State. But there's also a neat story there with the coach, Dan Monson, was told before the conference tournament that they'd be going in a different direction. That, I think they described it as a mutual decision, but he's basically getting fired from the job after 16 seasons. Then they go and they win the conference tournament. It's a lower seed. I can't remember what number it was, but they weren't the favorites. So now they're playing in
Sure.
March Madness, kind of on this borrowed time. And if they win this game as a 15 seed and all the what that means and the hype and the media exposure, I mean, I think you got to think about maybe bringing them back. I don't know how you can get rid of a coach there, or maybe if it's mutual, he's a bit older. But so I think it would be neat to see that continue to go on. The only
Or
thing
he's a commodity, right? And he can, I mean, even at his age, if he wants to move, he could just give him the middle finger and take a better job.
Yeah, absolutely. That, and or even just a way to go out. That if that's the end, but that's how you go out, that would be pretty wild. But yeah, that winning that game in the NCAA tournament really probably makes him, a hot name in the coaching market for some of the other jobs that are open. The only thing is, I like Arizona too. Arizona's a team I think I might pick to go to the Final Four out of that region. And my theory always with picking upsets is, yeah, you can look at some of these different mid-major teams and low-major teams and talk yourself into a lot of them. But I think it really often comes down to the higher-seeded team, how they're playing. And sometimes you can see these upsets coming. Like when UB beat Arizona a couple of years ago, Arizona was a very highly seeded team with the future number one pick in the draft, but they weren't playing great down the stretch. They had some issues with their coach, Sean Miller, being under investigation at that time. And you could kind of smell the upset coming from the other end. It's not always about the lower seeded team. They got to play well, but a lot of times it's the team that's ripe for an upset that can lead you along to making those picks in your bracket.
Yeah, it's I had a point there I was going to make regarding that whole, and I got distracted when you mentioned Sean Miller. Whatever happened? Where's Archie these days?
Indiana?
Rhode Island,
Yeah,
Hey, Noodles, now that we're on a nickname basis, if you say you are a basketball junkie,
American.
you watch men's, women's, high school, D3, D2, NAIA, probably NCCC.
Shout
What
out,
did
Billy Beeman.
what sport was Virginia playing against Colorado State last night?
My goodness. You know what this will tell you a lot. I we mentioned this a little bit before we started the Zoom recording. Obviously I'm a big, not just basketball fan, but sports fan and Buffalo sports fan, Bills and Sabres, big baseball fan as well, big New York Yankees fan. I turned off that Virginia Colorado State game to watch a little Sabres after dark action last night because my goodness, that was it. That whole first half, it was like nails on a chalkboard. You know what I mean? It was just bad, bad offensive basketball. And it gives ammunition to the people who are anti-college basketball, who kind of drive me freaking insane and say, like, oh, college stinks, college is bad. The NBA is the only basketball that I'll ever watch. It gives those type of people ammunition to say, see, this is the best product in the world. You know
A
what I mean?
10
Like,
seed,
yeah.
not even a 16.
And I referenced it earlier. I thought there was a number of Big East teams who really, really deserved to get in. And I say that non-biasedly, just because I do have a lot of connections with guys in those teams. Devontae Ticket Gaines from Providence, a close friend of mine who I played AAU basketball with, who's from Buffalo, had a great graduate season this year for Providence. I was really hoping to get a chance to see him play in March Madness. I thought the team
His family was
performed.
watching the game at Elmo's last night, Jonah.
Really?
I thought the team performed about as well as they could after Bryce Hopkins tore his ACL, which really could have sent the season spiraling out of control. They stayed poised, they stayed under control, and they won a lot of games. And they had like six or seven quad one wins, as opposed to Virginia, who I believe only had three. And St. John's was another one too. Rick Pitino had them playing really well at the right time. They had just beaten Seton Hall, who's another team you could make a case for, and they lose to UConn by 4 or 5 points. And you're telling me that St. John's team, which is big man Joel Soriano, was a former teammate of mine at St. Thomas More Prep School. You're telling me that team wasn't better than that Virginia team we saw last night. It just kind of, it definitely makes me mad, just because I think a lot of times we put a lot of emphasis on the numbers, the analytics, the this, the that. But I feel like sometimes people just need to sit back and watch these games and just sit back as a neutral party and assess, is this team a tournament team? Yes or no? Is this team better than this? Is this team better than that? I don't know. I guess there's no perfect way to do it, but it definitely made me a little mad last night seeing a great conference like the Big East not get the rightful respect that it deserves. But hey, they got three teams in it. They got UConn, Creighton, Marquette. I think all three of them are good enough to win a national championship, to be honest with you. I think if Marquette gets Tyler Kolek healthy, there's no reason why they couldn't go on a run. Obviously, UConn, they did it last year. They're very poised to go back to back, being the number one overall seed. And I referenced Creighton a little bit earlier.
If you want to get conspiratorial about the Big East, I mean, it's still a great basketball league and considered maybe one of the power leagues in men's college basketball, women's college basketball as well. But it's no longer, and hasn't been for a while, a football league. And as these super conferences are creating, it's not going to be one of the power conferences with all the clout and control. And perhaps that came into play with the selection committee, maybe even subconsciously. But years ago, the Big East used to get the most teams in the NCAA tournament. And, if it was borderline, a Big East team would probably get in over another mid-major or something like that. And now the Big East seems to be kind of considered maybe more like the Atlantic 10, a good basketball league, but not a league that gets five, six teams in the tournament anymore.
You switched over to the Sabres game. Some drama at the end. They lose by only a goal, but didn't quite seem like that kind of game.
No.
Vancouver outplayed them.
I will admit I went to bed after the empty net goal, so I didn't see the goal to cut it to 3-2. I saw them score the empty net with about 1:30 left, and I said, "Ah, that's enough for me." I was tired, but
Where are you among Sabres fans regarding this playoff push? Is it real, or are we just concocting a false sense of excitement here just to give us something to do through the end of March?
maybe a little bit of both. I do think it is somewhat real. They're a couple points behind with not that many games in hand, but they have two games coming up against the Washington Capitals, which I believe both are at home. So you'd think those are two good opportunities to keep climbing the ladder in the standings. The New York Islanders are sliding. I believe they've lost five or six in a row. And the Detroit Red Wings are right above them by a couple points. And we saw the Sabres beat the hell out of them the other day at the
Brutal
KeyBank.
result though last night with the Red Wings somehow pulling out a victory that should have been 0 points for Detroit, and that was
And
tough. That was a tough finish.
when stuff like that happens, that's when you start to sit back and doubt it and say, I don't know if this is real. I think, to be honest with you, I think the Sabres just need, and I told this to Jonah last year, they just need to sneak in one time, kind of like how the Bills did that first year of Sean McDermott. Just end the drought, get kind of the bad, evil spirits away from us, and kind of carry on and move on. I do think they're in a good spot. I think they have good leadership. I think they have great young players. And when they're on, they're fun to watch. The problem is when they're off, you don't even want to turn on the TV. So, been to a couple games this year. I don't think I'll be going back to a game because I don't have a good record at the games this year. I believe I'm like 0-2 or 0-3, so I'll stay far away from the KeyBank Center as much as I can.
I don't think it's your fault. I
Well,
think there are plenty of things to look at other than where the, whether or not you attended the game.
the superstitious side of me says it somewhat might be my fault, but I'll take some accountability.
They've
I'll be
lost
the
a
one.
lot of games without you in the building, too.
That's true. They've also won a lot of games without me in the building.
What have you thought in the games that you've been to this year and even the past couple of years, the atmosphere and the energy in the building and what it's been like being a Sabres fan and attending games of late?
I would say inconsistent. My dad had a funny line, actually. My dad and I were talking about the Sabres, and my little brother, Mark, was born in 2006 and has absolutely like no recollection of the Sabres being any whatsoever good, like totally total disinterest. Like if I'm like, "Hey, Mark, the Sabres are on tonight."
That's my son. We're also
Whatever.
born in 2006. He has no
But
idea.
my dad made the comment. He was like, "It's almost like they've lost like an entire generation of fans." And it kind of is true. It's sad, but it's true. I've been to some games this past year. I went to the home opener this year, which was great up until the puck dropped and the Rangers scored like 2 minutes later. I was at the game last year where they played the Minnesota Wild and they won, like, no pun intended, they won a wild game in overtime. I believe it was like 6-5, and it was a sellout. It was the night before the Bills played the Patriots, the DeMar Hamlin kick return game, Nyheim Hines taking the kick back 100 yards. It
Two
was
of them.
Yeah, it was it that night, that Sabres game. I believe it was a Saturday night game. It was about as electric as I've ever seen the arena. It was roaring. It was kind of at the point where they were, I believe, in the playoffs, or if not in, right on the cut line, and a lot of positive vibes. So it's just been inconsistent the past couple of years. Some years it feels like they have the talent to do it. Some years it feels like, oh, they don't have any talent to do it. But I just think they just need to sneak in one time, and I'm optimistic it will come. If not this year, in soon, very soon in the years to come. I'm generally very optimistic with my sports team, so I kind of keep that.
Do you
That
think
in
the
mind.
NHL should adopt the NBA playoff structure with the play-in games and 10 teams? And would that, if the Sabres got in that way, would that cheapen it all? Because that would get them in, that would get them some playoff action, kind of what you're talking about there.
At the end of the day, if you get in, you get in, right? So the play-in's been pretty
Just like
good at
Virginia.
the end. The
They can
play-in's
hang
been
a ban Virginia can hang a banner.
Virginia can put a number up on that banner. They can say they were in, but oof, they should put an asterisk next to that number. But no, I don't know. The play-in term has been pretty cool for the NBA, I've thought. Getting to see those players playing single elimination games. That's the beauty of this sport we're in right now with March Madness, right? Is single elimination. Nobody knows what the hell is going to happen. But obviously, with the professional leagues, the NBA, the MLB, the NHL, they prefer towards series structure so they can get the best team to win the title and the best team to advance to the next round and stuff like that. But getting to see these pro athletes playing like a one game season almost is been pretty cool. I think the NBA has been good. So if the NHL did that, I'd support it. I think it'd be fun.
The son of a coach, I want to ask your thoughts on what you, where you are with the Bills and the Sabres head coaches, because both for different reasons. Some people like Don Granato because he's not Ralph Krueger. Most people, I think, want him gone. Sabres fans, anyway. Bills fans seem to be torn on Sean McDermott as a great coach in the regular season, but frustrated not being able to get past the second round of the NFL tournament. Where are you about coaching, the culture, all these things that you see that are probably things that you and your family talk about around the dining room table on a regular basis?
Or me and my friends sitting around on the couch to talk about or text about in the group chat or something. But no, I think, a couple months ago, everybody was ready to fire Don Granato from the Sabres. But they kind of went on a stretch here where they were winning and everybody kind of pumped the brakes a little bit. So I'm a big believer in you got to just let the season play out regardless of how it is. So for Don Granato, I think the main thing for the Sabres is finish the season strong and then they can kind of assess where they are, what they think they need to do in the future. But I'm very pro Sean McDermott. I know he's kind of been a little bit polarizing in the past couple of months for the Buffalo Bills, and people are frustrated. We haven't been able to get over the hump and win and beat Kansas City and advance further on. But I like Sean McDermott. I think he's brought stability to this team. I think he's brought a good culture. He's built this regime, him and Brandon Bean, to the highest of the levels, being a top-tier contender in our league for the past couple of years. I know there's going to be people who are going to say, well, I can't do this, can't do that. No matter who your coach is, I feel like there's always going to be naysayers and negativity. So I think eventually here, again, I'm very optimistic in terms of my sports teams, the Bills, the Yankees, all of them. So I think that McDermott will be fine. I think sometimes it's just luck of the draw, right? The Bills have had kind of the short end of the stick the past couple of years, I guess would be the right way to put it. So it is what it is. I do think they McDermott brings good energy, good consistent focus towards the goal and keeping the main thing. That's obviously just my belief from the outside looking in. I think the sometimes people try to tear him down from the outside looking in, where I kind of give him the benefit of the doubt as, hey, I'm not in the locker room, I'm not around the facility, I don't see what it's like on a day-to-day basis. But I do respect the comments that you get to hear from Micah Hyde, Josh Allen, Mitch Morse, a lot of guys who have been respected leaders in our locker room the past couple of years who do nothing but praise Sean McDermott for the coach he is and the grown man he is. So I think those need to be taken into consideration as well when people assess him.
How do you feel about the state of the roster, the moves that so far have been made in free agency and players that aren't coming back?
Expected. I think it was time for them to go a little bit younger and kind of change it up. Part of it was not their intention, I'm sure. When you have a star quarterback who's has such a large cap hit, eventually it's going to come back to bite you and you're going to have to cut away from some great players. But no, I mean, I think the guys they moved on from, they served them well. They're very emotional goodbyes. I mean, nobody wants to see a player like Tre'Davious White go. a player and a personality like a Jordan Poyer, for example, go. But you know, it's the beauty and the bad part of professional sports is they got to move on. I'm sure they're going to bring in some really high talented young players in the draft and kind of bring in some veteran free agents to help fill those roles. I think the core group remains. As long as you have number 17 behind center, I think you have a shot to win the Super Bowl. And I think there's a lot of other guys who are maybe not on that level of importance as Josh Allen, but you know, Stephon Diggs, Matt Milano, Deion Dawkins. I think Terrell Bernard is emerging as somebody who really could be a superstar in the next year or two. So just excited overall to see. Change can be exciting, change can be depressing, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. They got who they got, and I'm excited to see how it goes. And like I said, you got the QB right, anything's possible. So
Interesting signing that was announced while we were on the podcast here. The Bills have signed safety Mike Edwards, who spent most of his first few seasons with Tampa Bay, won a Super Bowl, and then was with the Chiefs just last year. So this guy has two Super Bowl rings. He started in the Super Bowl a couple of months ago, but not a lot of starts over his career, only 28 starts. Did not start in the Super Bowl for Tampa Bay, but did start in the NFC Championship game against Green Bay. So some good experience there. I'd be honest, I don't know a ton about him, and it's kind of probably by the time this posts and we put this podcast out, I'll probably have a know a little bit more about Mike Edwards. But it sounds like a position of need. It's given that Poyer and Hyde are gone, Hyde probably gone. We don't know that officially, but
I think this probably does mean Hyde's not coming back. I had sort of been wondering if maybe we'd see a 1 year reunion with Micah Hyde on a similar contract, probably that Mike Edwards signed, because he hadn't announced his retirement yet and he hadn't
but the
really been
Bills
talking to
also
other teams.
signed Taylor Rapp to a 1 year contract right around this time last year, similarly, knowing that they had Poyer and Hyde coming back. So this could, that's an important position for them. This could be the type of guy that they would sign for a year if Hyde does come back, because you can't quite trust Hyde, his health. They would probably need this kind of guy anyway. I mean, he only started five games last year for the Chiefs, so he's not a superstar, no doubt starter in Kansas City, and wasn't the case in Tampa Bay either. So I don't know, Jonah. I think this could be the type of move that had to be made, even if Hyde is coming back, but
Well, I hope maybe you're right, because if Micah Hyde or Brandon Bean are listening, we can't lose all of our good quotes in the same offseason. We need some of the go-to guys, at least the transition period. Damon, we're losing. Nick McDonald, I don't know who I'm going to get all my quotes from next year. It's going to be a big year of transition. The Sabres, Kyler Poso was a big locker room guy. He's gone now. I mean,
Mittelstadt was a good guy in the
yeah.
locker room.
That's not that. That's not a good sign for you, Jonah. That might mean you have to, you know, I'm
Take
not
new
one to
friends.
assess your
Maybe it's him.
professional.
Maybe he needs to
Yeah,
cultivate
that's what I'm
new
saying.
voices rather than just rely on the obvious ones.
Well,
Maybe
that is true. Yeah,
you gotta look in the mirror maybe a little bit. You're losing me. You're losing. First off, I'm very blessed to be in that little tier of players. You know, those are good.
Reggie.
Yes.
Spoon, yeah. Coach Spoon, yeah.
It just takes more work. You got to get to know these new people, these new players, these new coaches. And I'm in the easy lifestyle stage of my career now, or entering
Well,
it.
if they ever doubt you know I got your back. You know I can give you a little bit of positive feedback so that they're not afraid to talk to you.
Well, talk to your boy Greg Paulus about that. Tell him to open up to you at
GP,
least once in a while.
what's the beef towards my guy Greg Paulus?
So I like Greg Paulus, and I don't really have a beef towards him, but I think there's an opinion that a lot of us in the media share that he keeps it close to the vest with the media, and you don't get a lot out of press conferences and interviews. And I think there's a genuine side to his personality that he doesn't let me and many other media people see. And especially on that beat, I'm used to getting to know Joe Mihalik pretty well personally, Reggie Witherspoon when I covered him, and your dad as much, and really almost every coach I cover, Bill Beilein up at Niagara Community College. So it's a little weird for me. It was the same with Chris Casey as well at Niagara, but it's just there's more friction, and it makes things more difficult when you're covering a coach at that level, and it's a little hard to get the genuine personality and the honest, authentic comments Even in one-on-ones and off-the-record type situations, he doesn't really let that side of his personality show to media members.
In this market, you should be as personable and outgoing as possible, because, you know, otherwise who the hell is going to know what you're up to? But yeah, you raise a great point, Jonah. College basketball coaches in this town are super affable, personal, like charismatic, good people. Nick's dad, of course, Jim Barron, Mark Schmidt, you know, and these are even, but you mentioned obviously that when I first got here, it was Red, the big four. Well, no, Van Bredikhoff, that was a weird one, but you had Reggie at UB, Joe Mahalik, and Mike McDonald. You know, it was like, it was a reporter's dream to be able to go cover these games and have to deal with these coaches who were just amazing. Anyways. Yeah.
I will say, for the viewers out there who maybe follow Niagara Hoops or remember Greg Paulus from his playing days, he was an exceptional person to play for as a player. Great coach, even better dude off the floor. I still maintain a real close relationship with him. Texts me all the time. He texted me the other day congratulating me on a great career. And I just expressed to him how blessed I was to be a part of that for 2 years with him. Obviously, I didn't commit to play for him, you know. He wasn't a part of the staff when I committed to Niagara to play. So from the outside looking in, some might say it could have been disastrous, right? You're going to play for a coach that you didn't know when you signed your letter of intent in May. But when he took over in the interim role in October, and then they eventually moved him to the permanent head coach a couple weeks later, I could not have been happier, because we really had built up a strong relationship over a couple months, and that relationship carries to this day. He's my guy. And I know he's got me for life. Anything I ever need from him, he'll be there for me. So I really appreciate him for that.
Well, I got an idea here. Maybe you can get him to sub on my Gloria Parks team when we need somebody, and maybe that'll break the ice, and we can have some better interactions that way.
There we go. I'll put that out to there for him. He's got three kids now, so I mean, maybe he needs some time to get out of the house and just go hoop. And no better person to play with than you.
Just to tie this conversation up a little bit about a guy who's not really out there in the media and, you know, maybe a little too close to the vest. Obviously, you're talking about some basketball people at the in Gloria Parks rec league. But if he were to show up, how many people would recognize him?
Who, GP?
Yeah.
I would think a lot. I think
yeah,
a lot
he
of
could,
people
like, show up. Like, what a ringer, right? To
right.
say, like, hey, to not he know
could,
that the guy played D1
could,
football and basketball.
Yeah, I was going to say, he could start throwing around the football, too, a little bit. I remember in the summer of my going into my freshman year, we were doing, like, summer workout stuff. We ended the year playing, like, a little, like, touch football game out on the Niagara soccer field, turf soccer field. And GP, somebody gave the football to GP. He wasn't playing with us. It was all players only, but he started slinging the football around. And he could definitely spin it. He could definitely throw that ball. I would have liked to see him play. I've seen him play when he was, you know, at Duke and at Syracuse, but I was young and I don't remember a whole lot. He kind of jokes me about that when I tell him that, because he's like, ah, don't make me feel old, man. Like, I'm not that old. But I was at the game. He played in Buffalo back in the day in the NCAA tournament. Duke came to Buffalo and played VCU. And I was at that game. I remember being at the game with my brothers and my dad. My older brother was a big Duke fan. And me and my other brother were clowning him the whole night for VCU. And Eric Maynor pull up jumper from the top of the key to win the game with about 2 seconds left. So I remember bringing that up to GP at one point when I played for him, and GP was like, "Oh, get the hell out of my office! Like, I don't want to hear about that. Maybe that cost me some playing time or something like that." But nah, all good experience.
The true reason why you transferred.
Yeah, nah, not quite.
Got on the wrong side of him.
Nah, not quite. Nah, no bad blood for me up in. It's funny, in this transfer portal world we live in, you hear a lot of stories about people who are just unwelcome back, terrible relationships with coach, and that really upsets me, because as somebody who went to a school for 2 years and then decided to go to a new school for the remainder of his career, like, I couldn't be prouder of my decision, but I'm also welcome back in that community with open arms. You know, like I said, not just Greg, but the other coaches that I played for there, Kevin Devitt, Austin Kelly, Brett Irvin, Brian Smothers. Brett Irvin, Brian Smothers have moved on from that program, but just real good people who would do anything for you, and great relationships with not only them but teammates that I played with over that tenure of 2 years. So it does make me sad when I hear a lot of these stories about guys who maybe go to school for 1 year and then transfer to another school for a year and then transfer again, and then they don't really have any backbone or any type of support from an institution. Because in my opinion, that's what playing college basketball is all about. It's all about the experience, right? No matter what D1, D2, D3, you can get a good experience at any level. JUCO, NAIA, you just got to go to the right place with the right people, and preferably at a level where you can play at. That was part of the reason I wanted to come to Damon. I wanted to be develop into a big time player, a key contributor on a really good winning team. And I feel like I've done that, turning myself into an all conference level player at our level. So just that, those are the things I like to value in terms of a person's college career, not what level they played at, were they taking private jets to their game, were they playing on national TV, or what type of experience do they have, what type of career did they have, and what will they truly remember from their time playing college hoops.
Nick, you got any takes on the Canisius job? Anybody you'd like to see get a look there?
No, nobody specific, but definitely just somebody who, they don't have to be from Buffalo, but somebody who can resonate with the Buffalo community. Because I think, like both of you guys mentioned, we live in a city that is filled with good vibes and kind of the small town feel of, the city of good neighbors. And you've referenced coaches over the years who have been really able to resonate with and connect with the community on multiple different levels. And I think Coach Spoon did a phenomenal job with that, to be honest with you. Coach Spoon is a real good friend of my dad and somebody who I've gotten to know over the years. A lot of respect for him. I'm really sad to see him go. I really am, because he's a good coach, but he's a better man. And he really stands for the right things off the court, which is most important. And whoever Canisius decides to hire, I hope it's somebody who can really connect with the Buffalo community and help bring that program up. There's no, like I mentioned, there's no bitterness, there's no bad blood. Like, hey, my dad got fired from there back in the day, and like, I don't want to see that program succeed. Absolutely not. A lot of great memories. My earliest memories of playing any level of basketball was shooting jumpers in the Kessler Center at one of my dad's practices or one of my dad's summer camps. So, my mom
It's
and dad.
time for a reunion.
I don't know about that, but my mom and dad met in that gym, in the lobby of that gym. That's where they met. And that place is kind of a special, even though, other people may say, well, it's not really the best facility in the league or this, that. They might want to take jabs at it, but that place is special to me. I won a high school Monsignor Martin championship in that gym. I learned how to play the game in that gym. Obviously, I mentioned my parents kind of have a history back in that gym. So it's just, no, I'm looking forward to see who they bring in. I hope it's the right person. I hope it's the right person that can elevate that program and get them back to the top of the MAC for sure.
Nick, maybe in 3 or 4 years, I don't know how long it would take. And of course, you don't want to wish ill on whoever Reggie Witherspoon's successor is, but that sounds like that would be a pretty good introductory news conference for Canisius, new Canisius basketball coach Nick McDonald.
Hey, I
My
do
parents met in the lobby for crying out loud.
I do plan on getting into coaching. Jonah mentioned that in the article he wrote about myself and my father, how my dad sees me as the son who's most likely to get into coaching and kind of be like him. And that means a lot because me and him share so much in common. And I always kind of admired his role and the assistant coaches who worked with him, their roles. So I do see myself getting into coaching. I'm not really sure yet what level, high school, college, professional. Like, I'm not really kind of in that realm of thought right now. Right now, I'm just kind of decompressing after a really long, tiring season. But I know over the next weeks or months here, I'll be able to figure it out. And hey, I guess you fit the bill of being my agent, I guess, then, Tim, because that was
Sure.
You're already my marketing agent, I guess, saying this is what we could do, this is what we could do
The
that.
price
So
is right, it's cheap. I don't take any percentages. So yeah, just
Okay.
anytime you need to get your message out, just come on the podcast. Until
I
you
got it.
get big enough and you get taken away by somebody else. Somebody else's bigger podcast will come. But hey, that's life in sports. I get it.
Well, I
I'm
think I can
loyal.
get you in at Madai. I used to teach there. I know some people over there.
Man, maybe we'll. I don't, it's been over, I guess, just about 11, 10, 11 months now since it shut down. But man, that was a dagger in my heart when I found out Madai was closing. It really was, because my dad got that job in 2006. So I was 6 years old, and he left in the fall of 2014, which was the, I was 14 years old. It was the fall of my freshman year of high school. So from when I was in like first grade till freshman year of high school, all I had was Madai. And I was there so much, and kind of got a little disconnected from it when he came over to Damon. And then his old player and old alum of that school, Keith Hack, took over as the head coach and kind of reinstilled the program a little bit again. Obviously, they won championships with Mike Blaine in years past, but I never really follow them as much as I should, and got the job. I went back there for a couple games, went back there to work out once or twice, and it was just kind of like this, I mentioned earlier, full circle. It was like this, like, oh, it feels good to be back. Like, a lot of good memories are starting to hit me, and then boom, a couple months later, I hear that they're shutting their doors for good, and that really sucked, because I felt bad for all the employees and more so all the players that were on those teams. I knew a couple of those players, a couple of local guys, and their team that they knew and their program that they knew was just stripped away from them, and it had nothing to do with their actions. It just was the school making the decision. So really sad about that. Every time I drive by down there on the Skajakwita, or whatever you want to call it, I see Madai, and I'm just like, I see the fences around Madai, and I'm like, man, there should be people going in and out of that building. I'm
A
sure
good
you
gym
feel the
too.
same way.
Somebody should get that
Yeah,
gym up and
great
running.
gym. You probably feel the same way too, just
Well,
like a lot of great memories. So
I was working there, so that was a hit for Bronstein Enterprises when they closed that down, and I lost the adjunct teaching classes, and I haven't found a new home for that yet. I'm still in the adjunct teacher transfer portal, hoping for an opportunity.
well, I can plug in, maybe I can do some work here over at Damon to get you as an adjunct, but that must explain why I never got offered a contract from Enterprise, Bronstein Enterprise. I was all these interviews and all these stuff over the years. I was kind of waiting for a little bit of a payday, but I guess we can just blame the Madai administration for that one.
Well, if your bracket picks work out for me, I'll split my winnings there.
Nick
Yeah.
Oodles, Toodles, Noodles, McDonald. Now that everybody knows the story, you can just refer them right to the podcast. You don't have to say it over again. Thanks for your picks. Thanks for your insight. Thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Appreciate you
Hopefully
guys
it
having me.
wasn't too taxing of an experience for you.
Feel like after doing one of these, it just starts to get easy now. Maybe I could be one of you guys one day. Just do this every week.
If we can do it, anybody can do it, number one. And number two, I think you've proven that you don't struggle at this at all.
Yeah. My dad's always said, or my mom and dad both, but especially my mom, they always say I always carry myself very well, and I'm very well spoken. So I'll give my
Well, I
mom a
didn't
little bit
say
of
that.
a, well, you kind of said it, so I'll give myself a,
I did.
Just be careful if you ever go on that train wreck podcast, just make sure you behave yourself and don't get out of control, because that's a little bit of a different environment, and let those inhibitions down, and you might say something you regret.
so the other night, I believe it was last night, it was either last night or 2 nights ago, my dad's doing some celebrity bartending thing for Coaches versus Cancer. I forget the location or the venue.
Oh,
Maybe I
Sports
should remember.
City. I'm going there tomorrow. Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. I mean,
Is that over by? Oh, no. Never mind. Never mind. Good.
hopefully all these listeners don't just flood the Sports City or whatever and kind of be like, what the hell is everybody doing here? But it's funny because my dad's a celebrity bartender. My dad doesn't really drink, but he was like, hey, do you know who Trainwreck Sports are? I was like, yeah, I know of them. Why? And he was like, well, there's celebrity bartenders with me. Anything I should know? And I was like, ah, they cover the bills, the Sabres, and I don't really know much about them either. But I guess that's important to note then, Jonah, that if I gotta keep my act in check if I go on others' podcasts. I can't be as free flowing as I am on the Tim Graham and Friends show. Nice name. It just kind of is like, just gives good vibes, like your friendly atmosphere.
You are now an F. You are now one of the great Fs of TGAF history.
Go. There we go.
Jonah
Did
named the
Jonah?
show, actually.
I was just gonna say, did Jonah try to get his name in the show or no?
He named it, and the whole thing is like TGAF, like DGAF. So you thought it kind of matched my attitude, I guess.
Well, Nick knows. Nick's
TGAF,
on.
TGAF.
Nick's online
That
enough to know
said,
what AF means.
right.
yeah, that doesn't shock me that Jonah didn't want his name on there. Very, very humble. Very humble. I'm shocked you told the story the other week about the heart stuff. I thought you were going to keep that on the down low.
I'm pretty open about things. If I was a college basketball coach, I'd be rather authentic in my press conferences and interviews. And I'm a little bit reserved. I don't always come out and say a lot of things, but if I'm on a platform like this and somebody asks me a question, I'll tell you the truth, tell you what I'm thinking.
He also looked forward to the sympathy.
So I'll tell you the full story there, Tim, is he referenced it on the I watched that little clip, but he was supposed to come to our game that day. We played Mercy University that afternoon, and Adrian Wojnarowski, the ESPN reporter, who's great friends with my dad and myself, was going to be there that day. And Jonah kind of had told me in advance that he had that circled on the calendar, that he was going to come watch our game and maybe get a quote or two from Woj. So when I didn't
He
see
got
Jonah
nervous. Jonah got so nervous he had a heart attack.
When I didn't see Jonah that day, I kind of jokingly texted him because we won that game by, my goodness, we won that game by, I think, 40 or 50 points. Mercy was not the hottest of the competition in our league. And I texted him, I said, hey, we would have been better off playing against your Gloria J team. And I believe Jonah's response was, well, I couldn't play at Gloria J today if I wanted to. And I was like, is everything all right? And he was like, yeah, I'm at Buffalo General right now. And then kind of morphed into the whole story that obviously you told the other week. But yeah, I told you this in person when you were there at my senior day game after the game with my mom. I was like, this is scary stuff. So I'm just glad everything's all right, and I'm glad everything's moving in the right direction.
Well, yeah, I did appreciate that. I came to a Damon game about a week later, my first kind of public appearance, if you will. And I saw a lot
The
of your
Your Kate
family and
Middleton
teammates.
return.
Yep. And then even some of the little campers wanted my autograph. That was nice to see.
Sal Capaccio was there. Sal Capaccio's kid was asking for my autograph, and then I was like, "What other autographs you got?" And I looked
You should
down.
get his autograph. He's
I
getting to
should.
be
Yeah,
as famous as anyone.
Max is a celebrity, but Sal had me sign Max's, I don't know if it was his program or whatever. And I looked down, and I'm expecting to see all these other players' names, and it's just Nick McDonald, and right below is Jonah Bronstein. I was like, Max, you didn't get the guy who maybe had 15 points over there. You just got the reporter who's just standing in the corner waiting to. Waiting to see me and my dad, but
He knows what's
hey,
up.
he knows what's up. He respects his other media members. Sal's the best, by the way, too. Sal's the best.
Sal is bartending at
Fantastic.
this event tomorrow too at Sports City. I go to that every year because I like supporting Coaches versus Cancer. And but every time I've been there and your dad was a bartender, he doesn't really bartend. He just kind of
No,
shakes
just
hands and
talks.
says hello and hangs out and appears. But I never really seen him do anything behind the bar.
One of my Niagara assistant coaches jokingly called my dad the mayor of Buffalo. And it's funny because later this year, one of that this was that was back when I played at Niagara, but then one of my teammates this year was like, we went out to eat at the restaurant at a restaurant, and like three or four people interrupted our meal to say hi to my dad. And one of our players was like, man, Nick, your dad's like Coach Mack, he's like the mayor of Buffalo. So I guess
Maybe.
maybe my dad
Maybe.
does enough, shaking hands, kissing babies. Maybe he can just replace Byron Brown when he's done ready to hang up this coaching stuff.
Yeah, that's a job that might open, and he could be the new Tony Masiello.
Hey, we got my marketing agent on the top left of my screen, and then we got my dad's future political campaign advisor on the bottom
Operatives.
left.
You got just McDonald operatives all over the place. Nick, thanks for this. Do you got a class or anything you got to go to? What are we doing here?
I do not. I'm free today, so
All right.
don't. You didn't hog up too much of my time.
We've
Don't
been
worry.
at it for a while. This might go down as the longest TGAF brought to you by CTBK CPAs and business consultants of all time.
Well, let's hope it's the most viewed. That's my goal.
Right, let's see what
I'll
we can
put it
do.
out there.
Let's see
I'll
what we
see
can
what I
do.
can. See if I can just.
See if
Let's
you can get
amplify
Woj to
this.
retweet it, and that'll help.
All right, I'll give Woj a text as soon as I hop off.
That would help.
All
That
right.
would help.
Here we
Hey,
go.
Nick, thanks for this. I've enjoyed it. Let's do this again. Let's make it a regular thing if you're up for it.
There we go. I appreciate you guys having me. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Jonah. Yeah. Hope this is the first time, but hopefully it's not the last.
Nick McDonald, senior guard at Damon. Is it former? You've played your last game. Are you former
I think I'm a
Damon
former
guard,
now.
Nick McDonald now?
Sadly. Sadly. Another dagger to the heart right here. That's
I'm sorry
former.
To say that. Sorry if I'm the first one to have said it.
Nah,
but great to have you here. And thanks to everybody out there for listening to Tim Graham and Friends, brought to you by CTBK, CPAs and Business Consultants.
The financial needs of a business go beyond tax and attest services. That's why CTBK goes beyond accounting services and offers outsourced solutions through their affiliation with CFO Solutions Plus. These additional services allow clients to focus on their operational and long-term strategic goals. Trust CTBK's outsourced solutions to provide cost-effective, value-added financial services tailored to your company's needs. Call CTBK at 716-630-2400. Again, 716-630-2400. Or go to ctbk.com to learn more about CTBK's outsourced solutions. We'll be right back.